Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right. So today we've got an exciting episode, episode 135. And we're going to talk about getting your gear ready. So this is going to apply to anybody, whether you are a new beekeeper and you're just ramping up and getting a hold of some of your new things to start off your beekeeping journey, or you're a seasoned veteran who just needs to make sure that you have all your stuff prepped and ready to go for the upcoming season. Now, what I want to do is I want to kind of recap. It's sort of this informal, you know, new beekeeper series we've been running here this spring. So we have episode 122. That was your beekeeping laws and kind of what you need to know around the legal aspects of beekeeping wherever you are. Episode 123, where to put your bees, kind of some tips and tricks around hive placement. And then episode 125 and 126 are all about Varroa mites, my strategy, general information about Varroa and how serious it is. 129 is primarily focused around or discussing why I focus mostly on the Langstroth hive. And I think that's just kind of a simpler approach for new beekeepers. Episode 133 is package bees versus nukes, figuring out which one's the best for you. And episode 134 talks about the real cost of beekeeping and kind of getting you mentally prepared for some of the expenses you'll see in year one and moving forward. There's also a video-based version of episode 134 on the YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. Make sure it's N-E-W-B-E-E-S at the end of that. And as always, these are all available on your favorite podcast platform ad-free. So if you dislike ads as much as I do, please feel free to buy me a cup of coffee. For just $5 a month, you too can provide the essentials of life to a struggling beekeeper. Oh, and if you do prefer, you can actually just listen on YouTube as well. A lot of people think of YouTube as being just a video-only platform, but we syndicate the podcast over there as well, so you can definitely listen to it that way. I know it's a little bit kind of unorthodox, but it does help the channel out if you're listening over there. So whatever works best for you. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about in your gear, we're going to talk about the protective gear. If you go back and listen from episode one, we've probably talked about this 20 times already, but we're going to talk about it again because I know there's a lot of new folks who are just jumping in brand new. They haven't started at episode one. They missed all that cool, exciting stuff in those first 80 or 90 episodes. It's probably more like 20 or 30. I don't know. But first off, whatever you want to get, if it's a full suit or you want to wear jeans and a jacket, you know, just make sure you've got something to protect yourself. At a minimum, I say at a minimum, you got to have a veil. If you're wearing thicker clothing, like let's say it's still, you know, it's still springtime, you've got jeans on, maybe you're going to have a sweatshirt on, and you're pretty well protected with that. Obviously, they're going to find a way in if you agitate them. But just having your physical, you know, your skin physically covered is going to make a difference. But I still recommend for the new, the newbies out there to go ahead and get the full suit if you can. But full suit is definitely awesome. Jacket is good. Veil is pretty much a must. However you figure that out, whether it's integrated into the suit or jacket or a standalone thing, whatever works best. Now for gloves, my recommendation is still going to be when you're starting out and you're brand new and you're making mistakes, it's kind of a weird thing because you lose a lot of dexterity. When you have the traditional beekeeping gloves that are kind of, you know, they're leather or some other kind of, you know, animal skin, animal hide, they do provide a lot of protection. but you just the dexterity that's lost is really difficult to notice or even understand until you've gone without them. I still recommend having them, and here's a key thing, probably the most important thing about those gloves you need to know. If you wear a size large or even an XL, bump down one size. So if you wear large, buy a medium. You wear a medium, buy a small. Because like I wear large, extra large. I've got pretty beefy hands. And if I put on gloves that actually fit me, there's a couple of problems you have. One of them is that they do tend to stretch a little bit over time. Once they become loose, and this is another thing that you're not going to understand until you become an actual beekeeper and you're doing this every day or at least once a week, the sticky substance inside the hive called propolis, the bees are going to put this on everything. It's great for keeping things secure. It's great for closing up holes. It is great for locking in any kind of bad things that get in. Like they have hive beetles go into a corner. Sometimes they can't get them to come out of the corner. They'll propolize a barrier around them and just, you know, entomb them and manage it that way. So propolis is a really cool thing. But when it gets on your gloves, it is a pain in the butt. And even if you're using different kinds of gloves, what we'll talk about in a second, but when you get that propolis on your gloves, all your fingertips, everything gets really sticky. Now you got this loose fingertip kind of dangling around. It's weird. And I found a picture. I posted it in our Discord room the other day. I think it was my first season beekeeping, and it's just a disaster. Like I've got, everything is a mess. But one thing you can see is I'm wearing these big goofy gloves. It makes things much more difficult. But I still recommend starting with like a traditional, you know, again, leather type or, you know, faux leather or whatever kind of glove to start with. What I want you to be working towards is no gloves at all. And this is a really scary concept. When you first think like, oh my God, I don't want to get stung. You kind of need to get stung, which is a whole separate, you know, allergy discussion to have. But the more you get stung, the more you kind of get used to it. Yes, it still hurts and it still kind of stinks. But you will get used to it. Your body's response to it should diminish over time. If it's getting worse, definitely consult an allergy specialist. May not even be a bad idea to do allergy testing before you get too far into beekeeping, before you make, you know, big financial investments. But I think your goal really needs to be getting to know gloves, because you'll find that the bees, if you have a nice gentle hive and you're slow, you're methodical, you're taking your time, because that's another, you know, challenge. When you're new, you're like, I got to get this done now. It's scary. It's kind of scary. It's a new thing. You're going to want to move probably faster than you should. So when you're moving faster, you're doing something you're not familiar with, you're going to make more mistakes, and then you have, you know, a greater likelihood of them possibly stinging you or getting a little bit aggressive towards you. But when you get to the point where you have no gloves on, you feel everything. You go to grab a frame, and you can feel a little wiggling under it, and you're like, oh, sorry about that there, little lady. You know, and you can move your finger out of the way, and that little bee walks off, and then you can pull the frame out. When you have those big goofy gloves on, you don't feel that. You squish her. Then she gets squished, and then everybody around her gets mad. You just killed her sister. You know, it gets a little bit rough. Now, as a transitional thing that a lot of people do, and some people never transition away from this. They just do this, and that's it. And that's completely fine. They go with, like, the light blue nitrile gloves. Now, if you aren't familiar with the term nitrile, some people don't know that. It's just basically like kind of like your medical type of glove. Or, you know, they have them in Harbor Freight for, you know, when you're working on vehicles, doing oil changes or working around grease. You know, you can throw those gloves on, do what you got to do, throw the gloves away. You don't end up with all the stuff, you know, under your fingernails and everywhere else, you know, spending a week trying to scrub off all that grease. But these are great for beekeeping. You get a lot of the dexterity back. The bees still can sting you through the nitrile glove, but I would say it's a little bit less likely than it would be if you're barehanded. So definitely not a bad way to go at all. As one of our Discord members, DJ, will tell you, you don't want to be using the thicker 9mm, I think it is, black gloves, because that is actually coincidentally the same color as a black bear. And he found that he did get stung a couple of times wearing the black nitrile. So go with that lighter color if you can. The next thing I want you to make sure that you have and that you have ready to go is a smoker. This is, again, it's kind of an essential tool. Some people think it's the most important. I myself, as I mentioned recently, I think the hive tool is more important, but however you prioritize it, they're still important. So you get your smoker, your fuel, and what you want to use for smoker. The most important thing here is don't start using accelerants, right? This is not where you're going to be using gas, kerosene, diesel, or anything else to, you know, to light your smoker. You know, just use things you find in nature, small sticks. You know, you can start it off with a little bit of a, you know, paper. Like I have all that excess paper that comes from Amazon packages and stuff. Just a little bit of that. whatever, just something to get it started. But you're going to treat this just like a small little fire that you're going to make at a campfire. Lots of small stuff to get it going, bigger stuff to keep it burning. And you really want to get the, you can get the fire kind of ramped up so you get coals in there, but you don't want to have it, you know, actively creating large flames when it's time for you to smoke the bees. You want that smoke to be a little bit cooler. You don't want to send out a real hot smoke. As far as hive tools go, we've talked about it before, but you can go to Amazon or wherever you like to buy your hive tools. One thing you could do is you could, you know, they're dirt cheap. I mean, you can get these out of China for like a dollar a piece. But of course, if you sell them on Amazon fees and shipping, and they end up being $6 or $7 a piece. But if you go in on a bigger purchase, let's say that you have a couple of friends that want to do that, you can buy 20 of them probably for like $25 and you get them really cheap. Get whatever style you like. Two recommendations I have for you on that is pay attention to the scraping edge of that. Sometimes they are really, really sharp. So it's almost worth taking a file and just touching it up a little bit just to dull it down. And don't, by the way, don't use a screwdriver. I know we talked about this before too. A flat tip screwdriver will just destroy the wood on your hives. Use the hive tool. It distributes that energy across the full size of the hive tool when it's separating hive bodies, and it reduces the risk of damage. So definitely use the hive tool versus the screwdriver. There is the type that has the J-hook. I've told you before that I'm not a huge fan of it. It's not that I don't like it. Conceptually, I think it's amazing. It's just you have to make sure that if you have a lot of propolis on your frames, you want to just get the frame moving side to side a little bit before you start J-hooking it. Because if you try to remove the frame with the J-hook, if this doesn't make sense to you, sit tight. I'll order one on Amazon and I'll do a video showing you guys exactly what I'm talking about. Make a quick note about that right now. Okay, I just made a quick note to do a video on exactly what I'm talking about with that J-tool. But basically what it allows you to do, if you're not familiar with these, you slide that end of the hive tool in between a couple of frames, and then you want to turn it perpendicular to the frames, and you'll use one edge to as a lever off of one frame, and the J will lift up and under the adjacent frame. And it's really cool. Like I said, it works great. The problem, like I said, I did it one time, and I ripped the whole top bar off the frame because everything was so propolized. But just get whatever one works for you. Get multiples, try them out. They're only, you know, $7, $8, $9 a piece or something like that. To get a couple of them to have around, it's always good to have a spare. Okay, now your hive equipment, we've gone through this pretty deep in the past. So I'm not going to go quite too deep today. But if you're using a hive stand, figure out what that's going to be, whether you're building a custom stand, whether you're putting it on 4x4s. You can put 4x4s that are treated down on the ground, put a bottom board on top of that, and you're done. If you want to set those on center blocks, get them a little bit higher off the ground. That's what I do. I did that video about that recently. Check out the YouTube channel where you'll see how I just put them up on 4x4s. It's just like a center block with 4x4s sitting on. If you wanted to stack them higher and make everything higher, you can certainly do that as well. Pallets are still good. Just be creative. That's one thing that's really important too. And I know I've mentioned it before, but you know, my trademark thing is like, beekeep your way, right? There are going to be a million people telling you, you got to do it this way. You got to do it that way. This has to be like this. This has to be like that. There are a few things out there that sort of just have to be one way, and there aren't a lot of options. When it comes to stuff like this, here's your concern. So you have hive beetles in some places. Hive beetles, when they're in their larval stage, they'll crawl out the front door of the hive, land on the ground, pupate in the ground for 30, 40 days, and then they come out as an adult hive beetle. So if they are right there at the hive, that certainly makes it a little bit easier for them to cause more problems in that hive or nearby hives. But if you laid down a whole bunch of stone underneath your hives, as an example, or maybe you had a piece of tarp and you just had the, you know, all of your stands were sitting on this piece of tarp, and you just went by every now and then with a leaf blower and kind of blew things off of it so that it didn't have a bunch of debris or whatever. Do whatever you want to do. Put a piece of plywood down, whatever you have available. If you want to put something under them to reduce the, you know, the area where a small hive beetle might pupate, absolutely. You can also use like a Grub-X sprinkled around on the ground. And we're getting a little bit off the off topic here, but start thinking about now what you're going to be using as a hive stand. And if you really just were like, oh, I don't know what to do, I don't know, just go buy some center blocks, right? Just go buy 2, 3, 4 center blocks, set them up, put your bottom board out on top of the center blocks, and you're in business. As far as bottom boards go, your two main options are going to be solid or screened bottom boards. I like and use them both. If you say, I'm budget conscious, man, I can only get one, what do you want to do? Some people will say, well, I like the screened one that has the IPM board slide rails underneath of it. And you can slide an IPM board in there, which is just that corrugated cardboard with the plastic, you know, like weather coating on it, like you see with election signs and stuff. It's that same kind of material. You slide that underneath of it, and that can you can use it for testing, for getting Varroa counts and stuff like that. But you can also just slide that in there in the wintertime, or a small piece of wood that's the same dimension, and you can go ahead and overwinter them like that. That's no problem. But I still recommend, think about whenever, here's a good one for you, actually. Whenever you're thinking, man, I'm not really sure what to do, like what's going to make sense for this setup or this configuration or this solution for my bees, think about the tree. Look outside. What do they have in the tree that they have made their home in, you know, in your backyard or in the woods or wherever it might be? And you can ask yourself, okay, is there a screened bottom board in that tree? No. Okay, well, then I probably don't need it. Now, the reason that I like the screened bottom board is I believe it reduces the number of bees that are bearding in the summertime when it gets really hot. There are fewer bees outside the hive, and I think it likely reduces their stress level. Now, I know when we had Randy Oliver on, you know, Randy said, well, you know, why do you care if they're bearding? And I said, well, I kind of don't, right? It's not so much that I'm concerned with the bearding act itself, but I do have a lot of the bald-faced hornets and dragonflies. So the more the bees that are outside, the more of them that are at risk. But the queen's laying, what, 1,500, 2,000 eggs, depending on her status, where she is, and what's going on in the hive, time of year, all of that. So if you're losing a few outside, it certainly is not the end of the world. But again, whenever you have a question about what should I be doing, just, you know, look to the woods, look to the trees, and just see what the bees are doing natively in their environment.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Now for hive bodies, you do kind of want to think about this a little bit up front. If you're young and strong and you got a good back and all that kind of stuff, you can use all deeps for everything. You can do a mix of deeps and mediums. I'm really, as I'm getting older here and as I'm working with, you know, more beekeepers that are in their 60s and 70s, I'm kind of telling people to standardize on mediums. Because lifting up those boxes, it's not a big deal when you buy them and you're like, oh, yeah, this isn't so bad at all. And then you load those things up with a whole bunch of honey and you're like, wow, this thing is like 30 or 40 pounds now. And even that by itself maybe isn't a big deal for a lot of people. But then you do it on that hive. Then you do it on the one next to it. Then the one next to it. And like the more hives that you're dealing with, the more honey supers you're moving around. If you don't have a good back, that stuff's going to take its toll. So you'll have to figure that out. We can talk about it later on in more detail about the specifics of, you know, which one you may be selecting. But you want to be getting these ready. Now, I would say, let's just run through a couple of numbers of what you want to be thinking about in case you haven't ordered or purchased equipment yet. Now, one of the upcoming episodes is talking about single brood chambers versus double brood chambers. And we're going to go into some of this in depth in that episode. I think I've got it scheduled tentatively as episode 138. Things are moving kind of back and forth, but it might be 137. We'll get it done here shortly. But one option would be a single deep queen excluder. And then I would say probably you want to have about three mediums on top of that to give some honey for the bees, as well as some honey for you and maybe an extra box depending on where they are. You can do two deeps. So you do double deeps. I still recommend having at least two, maybe even three medium honey supers with that. You can always do a mix of mediums and shallows, deeps and shallows. There's a lot of ways you can kind of set that up. It's all personal preference on that one. But I still recommend you want to have a full setup per hive. So let's say you've ordered two packages and you're going to go with a double deep layout. So you're going to want to have four deeps. I would say at least 8, maybe 9 mediums, and of course frames for all of them. You've got bottom boards for all of them, queen excluders. They're not mandatory, but they are helpful. If you standardize on an all medium setup, I don't even think I'd worry about a queen excluder. Let her go wherever she wants to go and figure it out later. But the bee's kind of natural up and down movement is going to, queen excluder is helpful. So, because if you look in nature, you have this hollowed out cavity and the bees are going to start at the top and they're going to draw out all the comb working their way down. And in, at the time, you know, when they first start things off, honey, brood, pollen, like everything's at the top. And then as they draw things down and they get established within that cavity, they get into that seasonal rotation where they have honey above and all around and brood in the middle. And they'll work their way down and then work their way back up as they consume. And they work their way down, work their way. So it's a constant up and down movement type of thing. So having a queen excluder in there is really helpful just to kind of keep that, at least have some separation for your honey. I use it primarily because I don't like to mix my honey frames and my brood frames. I just don't like to mix them together, which gets into the frames discussion. Like I said, I just mentioned about you got to have a bunch of frames. If you're using 8-frame hardware, obviously you want to have 8 frames per hive body. 10-frame hardware, same thing. I definitely recommend having extras as well. Like you can buy a lot of these in bulk, you know, like if you buy the right cell stuff, it's, you know, 20 of them per package if you want. So if you did that, and you said, okay, well, it's 20 frames in 2 deeps. So you would buy, I would say, probably 3 boxes. So that gives you enough to fully populate 5 deeps. And that's not a bad way to go. Now, there's always that discussion about what types of frames. You have all plastic. You have wooden with plastic foundation that then needs to be kind of treated for better acceptance. Doesn't have to be, but it will make a difference. Still my favorite, all wooden frame with wax foundation is still hands down the best. A little bit more work involved. I think it's well worth it. And I'm going back to that for my home hives at some point, but I'll get to it eventually. Okay, now, so that kind of covers all like the hive equipment, hive hardware, etc. Now I want you to just start thinking about feeding as well, because if you're getting packages, you know, you're definitely going to want to feed those to get them, you know, ramped up and to have something for those, you know, rainy days. So start thinking about whether you want frame feeders, top feeders, you know, jar feeders or whatever. Go ahead and kind of get that prepped and ready to go. Now, I always recommend having some nukes on hand. Nukes are handy for several reasons. One, you might want to do a split. So let's say that, you know, you're going into year two and you're like, man, these guys are just exploding here. These gals are just, they're blowing up. This hive's going to swarm if I don't get a handle on it. It's great to have that little nuke box handy. You can go ahead and do a split and you're kind of killing 2 birds with 1 stone by reducing that tendency to swarm. And you're making a new hive for yourself. And then what's really cool is you start using those frames of brood to backfeed that production colony. And now you got like 2 queens working as one, really. It's pretty nifty. But those are also really handy if you want to catch a swarm. So let's say that, you know, you're hanging out. You look up and you're like, oh my God, there's a swarm on my pill bottle swarm trap. We just did that video. In fact, I did a short today of the same thing. It's like an 18-second short of that 8-minute video for anyone with a slightly less or lower attention span. But you might see your pill bottle swarm trap has them, or your traditional swarm trap, you know, has a swarm in it. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to put them into a nuke. Nuke boxes are great for that. Now, I've got 2-frame. I think I've got 2, 4, and 5-frame nukes. I recommend, unless you're trying to do that divided deep kind of setup that I've talked about many times, the 2 and the 5-frame nukes are great. The 5-framers are just good general, you know, general nukes for multi-purpose. The 2-frame nukes are really cool if you're just trying to make new queens, because you can throw a frame, you know, a frame of brood in there with a young queen, cut them loose, and she'll lay up the whole thing, get crowded up, and right away she'll start making swarm cells. And you can start taking those cells out, and you can just make that a little bit of a miniature, almost like a cell builder colony from a 2-frame nuke, which is something we should probably do this year. Let me take a quick break, and I'm going to add a note about using 2-frame nukes for little queen factories. Okay, that note is done. So one thing I was really terrible about for a long time is I would say something on the podcast and I would say, hey, yeah, we got to talk about this thing. I should do a video about that. I would completely forget about it. And then people would ask me 6 months later, like, hey, man, what happened with that thing? And I was like, yeah, I kind of forgot about that. So now I have this great, I told you guys about it before, it's called Obsidian, O-B-S-I-D-I-A-N. It is a great like note-taking system, and I use this for all the episodes, all my videos. and I can just run through and keep track of everything, and it's amazing. I'm really happy with it, and it's free, so that's pretty cool. Anyway, so I just made a quick note about how to make a little queen factory out of a two-frame nuke, so we'll try to do that this year as well. So we talked about all the basic, you know, hardware and your nukes and everything. Now, the reason that I tell you that you always want to have some backups and some spares, things just happen. Like, people will sometimes give away hives. They might say, like, well, I really paid a lot of money for this hardware, but if you want the colony, you can have my, I want to keep the hive. You can take the frames, put them into a hive that you have. It's a spare hive. You can catch a swarm. You can have a split. Like I said, there's lots of things going on that might cause you to need more hardware. My general rule, like if you had two starter colonies, I always say, well, it's good to have one backup. But as you grow in size, it almost gets to be about a 30 to 50% type of thing. So if you have 10 hives, you're probably going to have 15 or 20 the next spring, as long as you took care of them and they didn't succumb to any kind of disease or illness. Having spare hardware is always great, and it's expensive. So it's a real tough balancing act. So that's just something you're going to have to figure out with your budget. Like I said, we went through those numbers the other day. We did a video and the previous podcast episode talking about these budget numbers. It gets expensive, and it gets expensive really fast. But having backup is great. If you want to kind of reduce a little bit of those costs, what you can do is, like, I've used a lot of nukes, and I've mentioned this before, but you can take like a 5-frame nuke and just stack them like 4 high if you want. It's a simple configuration, simple setup. You can go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, whatever your favorite, Canadian Tire. You know, go to your favorite hardware place or place that has stuff. I don't even know if Canadian Tire sells plywood, by the way. They seem to have everything else. So anyway, wherever you buy your plywood and things from, it's easy to make nuke boxes. They're very straightforward. You don't have to do anything fancy or special with them. And that can definitely help reduce some of your cost. Now, I'm going to call this, especially in year one, this is definitely an optional thing, probably not necessary for year one, but as you're moving into years two and on, I'm talking about some honey harvesting gear. In year one, I don't recommend that people harvest honey. There are some places where it's not an issue at all. The flow is so massive and there's so much forage available and you have a really good long flow and it's not a big deal at all. In a lot of places, and I think it's safer to say in most places, if you have a year one colony just starting out, and I'll use the example of myself. I've got some package bees coming to the house. I haven't had bees regularly at the house here for a couple of years. But packages are going to show up, let's say, 1 April. There is no drawn comb. I probably will catch a swarm before I get my package bees started. So think about that. If you have an explosion in the size of the colony, that means you have a whole bunch of new workers emerging. If that's the case, those eggs were laid at least 21 days ago to begin that surge, which means realistically, probably 5 or 6 weeks ago is when those eggs were being laid. So we're already going to be a month and a half behind as the flow is ramping up. So in addition to building up the colony itself, then they have to, of course, they're drawing out all the new comb. You know, if you don't have any comb that you can give them, drawing out all the comb, building up all the resources just for themselves. They've got to have enough to make it all the way through the summer, potentially all the way through the fall if it's a light fall flow. And then they got the winter right behind that. So I don't recommend taking honey in year one. But honey is another one of those things. It's like anything else that you do in life. There's budget ways of doing things. And there's the high-end way of doing things. Like here in the U.S., I buy all of my, probably 95% of my tools and things. I go to this very elite local place. And I don't like, again, I don't like to brag, but it's mostly for people who are very affluent. It's a place called Harbor Freight, where we can get only the finest merchandise. Now, I joke around about that, but Harbor Freight, it used to be a little junky, like, you know, a lot of stuff that was made on cheap contracts overseas. So they weren't using the best of materials, not the best tolerances on things. And it was really hit or miss. They've upped their game like in the past 5 years or so. I pretty much buy everything from them. And it's great. It's a good budget place if you're not familiar with it or if you're not from the U.S. It's a great place with just lots of kind of budget tools. And you know, even some of it is almost good enough now if you're, you know, to use as a professional, if you are in a professional field. But I digress. Honey harvesting is the same way. You can go out and you can spend thousands of dollars on high-end extractors and decapping machines. And like, there's so much that you can do. Or probably like for about $100, you can buy some food grade buckets, honey gates, some filters, some, you know, microfiber mesh cloth, and some bottles. You know, I use a lot of the mason jars are real popular, and that's about it. So there's a lot of ways that you can do this on a budget. I wouldn't even be worrying about that in year one. Now, what you can do is a lot of people like to say, look, I'm not going to take a lot from, but I want to take a little bit. If you're doing that, you know, again, be very careful, be cautious. I don't recommend it, but if you feel like you got to, they're your bees, do what you want with them. One thing I will tell you is please be mindful of the time of year, because you got to remember, we don't want to harvest honey if we are supplemental feeding them with sugar syrup. We really want our honey to be pure honey, you know, that is from nectar, from trees and plants and things that are in your area. The reason I prefer to only use and harvest spring honey is because there's a far greater likelihood that my bees are getting everything 100% from nature. Once you get beyond the springtime, you can say, no, I haven't been feeding. And the person like three streets over, like a mile from you, has had bucket feeders of sugar syrup for 3 months. And your bees are just raiding that sugar syrup, right? So I recommend only taking the honey in the spring during the flow. Again, you do what you want to do. I'm not gonna tell you how to run your harvest there. But there are things that you can get that are a little bit budget. You can get an uncapping knife, or you can get the scraper style of decapper, which you'll use to just open up to remove the tops, the caps of the honey. And that exposes the honey and then allows it to be squeezed or extracted by centrifugal force using a extractor. If you are going to spend the money on an actual honey extractor where you put the frames into it and you spin it, spins around, the centrifugal force pushes the honey to the edge and then it drips down to the bottom. Again, my personal recommendation here, save up for it and get the electric motorized extractor. I think it's one of those things you'll thank me for it later, but cranking that thing unless you got kids. If you got kids, man, just put the kids on the crank and let them go. But if you're doing that yourself, get the motorized one. Little word of caution, I bought my motorized one from China, and I was checking something out right before I used it the first time. There was something that wasn't right. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if I plugged it in, it didn't work or whatever, but I unscrewed and opened up the electrical box that's on it, and like the wires were barely connected. I think the hot wire was actually grounded out against the chassis of the thing. Like I could have touched it and probably gotten shocked. So definitely pay close attention to those if you're buying them from less than reputable overseas sources. All right, everyone. I know a lot of this is kind of redundant and it's refresher because we've talked about this several times. But like I said, I also recognize there's a lot of new people that are just kind of jumping in and they're starting from the current day's episodes and they're not going back. I still recommend going back to episode 1. And, you know, going all the way through that, if you can, it'll help to provide like a good, solid foundation of all the terminology and things that we discuss. Like, for example, super. When I say the word super, you're like, super what? Right. So a super is a box. Right. So a honey super is a box with frames designed for honey. But things like that are things that we talked about like in episode 5 or 6. But again, you can join us in our Discord room. Ask any questions you want. Email me, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. I'm always happy to chat it up with you and give you my 2 cents. But let's start getting your gear ready. Get everything prepped. And, you know, we're going to do another video and add to my list as well about planning for your first inspection. Because your bees are going to get there. You're going to get them installed, which is another video I will do as soon as my package bees get here. But you need to understand what you're going to be doing during your inspection. And I'm going to walk you through that as well. But just start getting all your gear ready, get things prepped, get things painted, and you'll be a little bit, you know, ahead of the game when they finally arrive. So check us out on YouTube. It's just youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. We're putting things out pretty regularly now that the spring ramp up is taking place. Like I mentioned before, we got the pill bottle swarm trap video. We got both the long and short version of that. The do you really need a landing board video. And I don't think I'm going to get to the one I wanted to do today, but I am going to do one about installing nukes and what you have to do for that. So we'll get that out later on in the week because I get so many questions about that. You know, what's the best way to install my nuke? So we'll talk about that in addition to the discussions and things we've talked about package bees. So again, jump in the Discord room. It's getting busier now that the season is starting to ramp up. I think we're getting 4 or 5 new folks a day, and that's always fun. Go to the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. There's a download section you can go to. If you want to go download swarm trap plans, 5-frame nuke plans, there's a few other things there. Just go ahead and check that out. Those are all, obviously, they're free for your use. I got them for free, so they're free for you. And I believe that is all that I've got for you today. I got to get back out to the yard and put a few swarm traps together and just get back to the bee stuff. So take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.